This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Welcome to Rooted and Robust Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Rooted and Robust Podcast, the show that seeks to inform, educate, and inspire you to cultivate and develop the skills you need to achieve success. Yes, I am back again today with an amazing episode for you, like always. My name is Ozioma Anyoji, and I am not alone on the show today. I always have a guest. Today, we have a special guest joining us to shed light on the topic that has become increasingly relevant in recent years. I am talking about the gig economy. So today I want to look at navigating the gig economy. Now, somebody is probably wondering, what is the gig economy? What is the gig economy? I'm thinking, should I leave that to our guest to answer, or should I do justice to that? Anyway, for anyone wondering, the gig economy is a labor market that is characterized by prevalence of short-term contracts, or what we call freelance work, you know, as opposed to the permanent jobs and all of that. So I'm sure you know what gig economy is now. All right, so whether you are a freelancer, independent contractor, or considering taking the leap into the gig work, this is the episode for you. So our guest, this is his field, and with his world of experience in finding work and building client base, get ready to gain valuable insights and practical advice on how to thrive in the gig economy. I am excited about this episode, and please, guys, join me and welcome Ajayi Olakunle. Olalekan, I should not be doing this.
That's fine.
Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
I'm happy to be here, Zoma. And this happens to be one of the topics that actually gets me through. This is my field. This is my life.
Yes.
I call it my life because whatever it is that has happened to me in the last 2-3 years, the gig economy made them happen. Every other thing that followed started with the gig economy. So this is my life. This is where I make a living. This is just everything about me.
Oh, why am I super excited? We are about to glean from the master himself. Oh, yes. So before we get down to business, right? Now, this topic is probably divided into two things: navigating the gig economy and building a client base. I mean, there's no how you can make it in the gig economy if you don't build a client base. So, but then before we get down to business, just a big intro about you. You've given us an intro by telling us that the gig economy is where you operate. But I know that beyond that, there are other amazing things that you do, and of course, other amazing projects you've worked on. So let's get to meet Ajayi. Let's get to meet you.
So my name is Ajayi Olaleko. I studied mass communication, first degree, and at the master's level. I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, someday I'm going to actually, you know, be a lecturer.
Wow.
So that explains all the academic pursuit and all that. So someday I just will be taking my PhD and then just do a few years in the lecturing, you know, in the lecturing job.
Mm-hmm.
So far so good. I presently am a business coach and consultant, and my niche is actually freelancing or the gig economy. You know, I started out business coaching generally, but ultimately I narrowed down into teaching people just how to start out as a freelancer, because much of my success in business actually emerged from freelancing. Of course, I have other businesses right now aside from freelancing, but that's like the bedrock of every other thing that sprang up afterwards. So I I sometimes call myself a content creator too, you know, because I do a whole lot of content creation on several other platforms, whether it's textual, I'm on Medium, I have a blog, I write every day, I write every week on my Medium, and of course on my personal blog on my website. Mm-hmm. I have a YouTube channel, I create video content. I also have a podcast too, so I create audio content too. So if you want to call me a content creator, that still works. That also works.
Yeah.
I have an organization called Emerge Africa. And one of the things we do in the organization is to inspire Africans to leverage on technology and personal development to be whatever it is they want to be. You know, I often tell people that we've come to a place, or we have come to a time, you know, in the world where it is difficult. I mean, people do it, but I say an African has no excuse. You know, even though we live in the third world, people don't like to say, but we live in the third world based on our development level.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are just naturally designed to work against us.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of infrastructures, the poor education, and all of that. But with the internet and technology on our palm, I mean, almost every young person has a mobile phone, an Android mobile phone, or even the iPhone.
Yeah.
There is a lot you can do with just your mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to start by saying, when I started freelancing, I did not get a personal computer, a laptop, until I'd spent close to 2 years as a freelancer.
Wow.
And I'd made nothing less than at least 5 million naira as a freelancer using my mobile device. And in case you think my mobile device was a very sophisticated one, it was actually a Tecno Provo 4.
Wow.
That I bought around, was it 50,000 or 55,000 in 2020, all right? I used that for close to 2 years before I finally got a laptop. And that was not because I could not afford the laptop, but I've always been somebody who could get almost anything done on my mobile phone. I do, even till today, with the laptop, I sparingly use the laptop. I probably use it maybe 3 to 5%. I use my phone to do 95% of everything I do, whether it's Canva, PowerPoint design, whether it is PDF design, whether it is graphic design, everything happens on my mobile device. So the point is, we have come to a time where nobody has an excuse why you actually can't compete fairly. And I say, with technology and with the internet, a person in some country in Rwanda, some country in Nigeria can compete fairly with somebody in America to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And you will still be able to leverage on certain opportunities. And freelancing actually exposes, you know, makes that clear to you. The freelancing world is filled with people from across the globe. Mm-hmm. Africans, Europeans, Asians, you know, everybody from all over the world. And there are a lot of Africans doing so well for themselves in the gig economy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I stand for. This is why I campaign about. This is what Emerge Africa is, you know, is about. And I feel like maybe I should just stop here. This is me in summary. I have a lot to say, but let's wrap it up with that. This is me in summary.
Oh, wow. It's good to have you. Thank you for being here. Thank you. I am curious, from mass communication to freelancing, what inspired you? I'm just curious.
I wanted badly to practice, and I, you know, started practicing. I was in the industry. I worked as an on-air personality for a few years. So at some point, it was 2018, I had to sit myself down and ask myself, where is the world going to? Where is the world, you know, heading towards, and how can I best position myself, you know, with the trends and be relevant? So for me, I discovered that a lot was happening in the new media space, you know, on social media, on the internet. Of course, a lot was also happening in the traditional broadcasting industry where I was, and I was really enjoying my work as a radio presenter. I had so many accolades from people who actually loved what I did or what I do.
Yeah.
But I felt like the world was tilting towards the new media. Even traditional broadcasting was beginning to see the relevance of the new media. For example, TV stations and radio stations now leverage on Twitter, leverage on WhatsApp to communicate with their audience, you know, for question asking and all that. Even TV stations have YouTube channels now where they put short clips of their programs, their Facebook accounts, where they put short clips of their programs, you know. So there's like a convergence of all the media forms together, you know, in our present day. But I just thought, if a lot is happening in the new media, I felt like I was going to be much more relevant in the new media space than to stay in the traditional broadcasting industry. So I decided that I was going to pivot. I was going to switch, you know, from the traditional media to the new media completely. I wasn't ready to combine it. So I just wanted to switch.
You went all out.
So I went all out. So in 2019, I began to learn digital marketing. I took a course. I started with the foundation. I can't remember what it is now. It's a Google certificate program. I started with that. And after getting the foundation, of course, digital marketing is broad. It's very broad. So I decided that I was going to pick one of the subsections. And for me, it was actually content marketing because I write. One of the things I love to do is to also talk. So basically, I had the foundation for somebody who I have the giftings for somebody who can actually, you know, grow in content marketing. So for me, I just went straight into content development. So from 2019 up until now, it's just been me trying to develop myself, trying to grow in the new media space, you know, trying to hone my own corner and build authority and expertise in this aspect of digital marketing. So that's the genesis.
That is where it all started. Awesome. Now, there is something that you mentioned that is very striking, and that is where I want us to begin the conversation today. You said when you wanted to start out, you took some courses, and you took some foundational courses, and you grew from there. Now, for someone who is just starting out, what would be your advice, or what are some of the first things someone starting out in the gig economy, in the freelancing world? What would be some of the advice you would say to this person? Start from here, do this first, and all of that.
All right. I still had this discussion with someone yesterday who said she was interested in social media management. So basically, if you asked me to summarize into three steps what it takes to succeed in the gig economy or in the freelancing space, I'm going to say these three. Then by the time I'm done with that, I will now go back to, you know, what to answering your question. So there are three things that are important if you want to succeed in the gig economy. The first one, you need a skill, all right? Because in the gig economy space, what you sell is your skill and your service. So you're expected to create value for your clients. So the first and the most important thing is the skill. What exactly are you bringing to the market? That's the first one. The second thing you will need is a solid portfolio. All right? Because in the gig economy, your clients and customers are, you know, scattered abroad. I mean, your client is actually in the United States of America. They have never met with you in person before. So their first encounter with you, you know, to judge whether you can do what you claim you know how to do is going to be your portfolio. So the first thing a client will ask you when you reach out to them and say, oh, I can do X, Y, Z for you, is send me your portfolio link. They want to go check your work and see if you are the right person for what they actually need. So you need a portfolio. Then the third one will now be a platform vis-a-vis marketing. I mean, side by side, you know. So the next thing is to actually, now that you have a skill, now that you have a portfolio, you need to connect with the clients that will use your service and pay you for it. Okay, so that's where marketing comes in. And of course, that's where platforms come in. You know, platforms like Upwork, LinkedIn, and the likes. So the very first place to start, if you want to leverage, is to ask yourself, what skill set do you have? What skills do you have? What experience do you have that the world has a need of? You know, you this will actually take some research to see, okay, what can I do? Can I write? Can I design graphics? Can I design websites? What exactly can I do? Can I do copywriting or translation? So find out what skill you currently possess that the world is in need of, that there is a demand for. So the chances are that you may find out that you do not have, because, you know, in my academy, one of the things we do with the students is that we show them there are two criteria that I tell people to actually look out for when you want to pick a skill to sell. The first one is high-paying skills. Mm-hmm. So there are skills that would pay you less, and there are skills that will pay you more. For example, I wrote a post on Facebook recently where I was talking about a carpenter that worked for me for close to an hour. And when the job was done, I asked him how much he was going to collect, and he said 700 naira. I mean, that's in the Nigerian currency. If that was actually to be converted to dollar, it's going to be probably $1.20 to $1.30. And I'm like, I was shocked because I was expecting him to charge me more than that. Mm-hmm. But based on the value of the kind of skill he has, that's like a fair amount. So what I did was I paid him double for the charge. But even paying him double, that's going to be, say, around $3, $1,500. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of a low-paying skill. And that's even not a digital skill anyway. I just have to bring that in. Mm-hmm. But there are skills, for example. The first gig that I did as a freelance writer was $15 per hour. So can you see the difference?
Yeah.
$1.20, $15 per hour. And you know, I haven't grown in the industry. The least I charge now for an hour is actually $35. Mm-hmm. So there are jobs that you do that pay you less, and there are jobs that you do that pay you more. So that's the first criteria. You need to go for the high-paying ones. The second criteria is you need to go for in-demand skills. Because what is the essence if you have a skill that nobody needs?
Yeah.
So you also need to go where there are a lot of clients, where there is a huge market size. You know, that actually guarantees you that you are likely going to get a job very soon. So those are the two, you know, criteria to actually look out for. So I'm saying you might evaluate yourself and discover that you do not have any of the skills that, you know, fall into the category of high-paying skills, in-demand skills. You know, you might have some other skills that the market does not want. Mm-hmm. So not to worry. What you now need to do is to go after the skills that you feel you are best suited for. So you go through the list of high-paying and in-demand skills and look at which of them can you learn, you know, and then make a practice of. So that can then be social media management or something. And that is where you now do exactly what I did in 2019. I was a JJC when it comes to digital marketing. I did not know what was called SEO, off, you know, on page SEO, on site SEO, offsite SEO, whatever it is. I didn't know jack about all of those things. So, and I wanted to go into the space. So I began by taking, as a matter of fact, I didn't have money. Just advise people who want to learn skills, start with the free courses. They will give you some foundational knowledge of the, you know, industry. Three things, just a recap. Three things that are very important when you want to, you know, succeed in the gig economy. The first one is skill. Second one, a portfolio. The third one, platforms, you know, where you can actually market and connect with clients. You know, the first thing to do is to actually identify the skill that you want to sell in the gig economy. And if you do not have any skill, the next thing to do is to learn a skill. And, you know, over 1 month, 2 months or thereabouts, you may not have become perfect. Of course, there's even nothing like perfection. You always need to grow. But at least you have some grasp of the skill, and you might be able to deliver some service at that point, you know, maybe after 1 month or 2 months, and then you can build up on that and, you know, improve your expertise over the years. Mm. Does that answer the question?
It does, perfectly. In fact, you went over and beyond in answering it. Now, something very striking, something that I really want you to touch on is in having a skill. Now, some people will say, okay, but then I have this skill and I have that skill. So I want you to talk on the point of niching or specialization when it comes to the gig economy. Because some may say, okay, I have different skills. So do I go all out with all of my skills? Or how do I do it? Since it's having a skill, you know, building solid portfolios and all of that, what of me that has maybe three high-paying skills or maybe one or two? What is the place of niching or specialization when it comes to the gig economy?
All right. You know, that's quite debatable. You know, different schools of thought, you know, have different opinion about it. But if you ask me from my experience, okay, when I wanted to start out as a freelancer, I, even now, the crazy part is I go for new and complementary skills almost all the time. So, you know, for example, this year, I've taken a certificate course in technical writing because I never used to do technical writing. I just wanted to, you know, explore. And I'm also currently on the cybersecurity program, you know, with Cisco. You know, so when I wanted to start out, the first thing I did was I listed all the skills that I had, and I had close to 10 high-paying skills, you know, even till now. I mean, public speaking is actually a high-paying skill. True. Writing is a high-paying skill. True. I had a certificate in management consulting. You know, I had several kinds of skills all stacked up. One of the things we do with our students also is we tell them to list all the skills they have and then rate themselves from 1 to 10, which of the skills they are, you know, very good at. Mm-hmm. With 10 being the highest. So the top three, then we then ask you to pick one out of the three. I belong to the school of thought that actually subscribe to, it is better to be a specialist at one thing, mm-hmm, than to be a generalist at everything. Mm-hmm. All right. And I also advise that when you are starting out, it's actually better to niche down, face one thing, you know, develop expertise and build authority on it. Then when you start growing, you can then decide to do 2, 3, 4 things, you know. Hmm. And also, when you're starting out, it's also advised, you know, I mean, niching down does not mean you are still not good at every other thing. It does not also mean that you cannot do a lot of other things, you know, side by side. But when it comes to branding, for example, when it comes to positioning yourself on the internet space, say on LinkedIn, for example, it actually makes more sense when you identify yourself as one thing, not as, you know, 2, 3, or 4 things. It becomes very difficult for you to communicate the value that you can offer, except if the 2 or 3 things are complementary skills. Mm-hmm. That works. For example, if you're a web designer and a graphic designer, I mean, you can combine the two together.
Yeah.
They work together. Mm-hmm. I mean, but let's say you are what example can we use now of 2 skills that are, you know, in different worlds? I mean, I'm just simply saying, if I thought you're going to push yourself for 2, 3 skills, make sure they are complementary. But if the skills are not complementary, then do your best to actually stick with one. Then over the years, you can actually branch out into several others. So I'm going to ask you, let's say a random person has an eye problem and wants to see a doctor. So there is a doctor who is a generalist doctor, can attend to eyes, you know, and several other things based on experience, which is not impossible.
Yeah.
Then there's also a doctor who is an optometrist who actually is a specialist when it comes to the eye. Who would you approach? I will approach the specialist doctor.
I would do same.
That's just me. That's the point.
Yeah.
So I will approach the specialist doctor rather than go to a generalist. In most cases, you would also know that if you go to some generalist hospitals and then you complain of a particular ailment, oftentimes, some of the doctors will refer you to a specialist.
Yeah.
All right. So, when it comes to Upwork, for example, some of these platforms also do not allow you to actually say you're doing 3 or 4 things. Mm. Upwork, for example, if you really want to, you know, grow on Upwork, you must niche down. You need to niche down. Mm. You need to identify. As a matter of fact, when you're registering an Upwork account, there is the wide category, then there's the subcategory, you know, so they expect you to niche down and narrow down to the tiniest idea. And it actually makes a lot of sense, you know, when you become a specialist in a thing, that when you actually just want to be a generalist at, you know, the fear is often that, am I going to have enough clients? Will I make enough money? Or sometimes it's just the fact that you're just passionate about all the skills and you feel like, no, I don't want the skill to be relegated to the background.
Mm-hmm.
Well and well. Evaluate yourself. Which of those skills are you so good at? Is the skill in demand? I always advise start with one skill. So when I started my business in 2020, very interesting, I registered my business with the CST as a business support service, and we're rendering 6 services. Graphics design, web design, content development, email marketing, social media management, and social media advertising. Because I actually had all the skills. I can run Facebook. I don't pay anybody to run Facebook ad. I run them myself. Email marketing, automation, I am good at it. So I began to render all the services. But ultimately, so this is me actually saying something contrary to what I'm saying now.
Yeah.
I advise you start as a specialist, niche down. But I started as a generalist and then niche down 1 year into the business. And why did I niche down? I niche down because when we started rendering six services, I discovered that much of the clientele was actually, you know, coming from content development. So ultimately,
I threw away all the skills
and I focused on content development. You know, so, and I have actually built myself around that over the years. So basically, but if you ask me, I mean, from where I stand now, four years after I began in the freelancing industry, I'll tell you to niche down.
Wow. Okay. One question that is always on the lips of everyone in this space is, how do I attract clients? Or how do I stand out from the competition? Because it's one thing to have a skill, but then it's another thing to have people want those skills, or people demand the skills that you have. So for people in the gig economy, or for people wanting to get into this economy or into this space, what would be your advice on how to attract clients, or how to stand out from every other person, from the competition?
All right. Man, it's a lot. All right. You know, this aspect of freelancing, in my training, we actually devote about 3 modules to it. And that should be around 4 to 6 hours of content to teach it. You know, so, but I'm going to summarize it. And I'm even going to use a very, you know, relatable example. So what we're looking at is how to attract customers. Okay. Yeah. So you as a lady now, there are things you like in the opposite sex. I mean, in a guy that you find attractive in a guy. As for some ladies, it is, oh, he must wear, you know, some nice cologne, you know, he must smell nice, he must look neat and that. Then, you know, some people like facial hair, you know, long beards and all of that. So there's a guy that would pass you right now. Let's say you're going out, a guy walks past you and you don't notice him. There's another guy that walks past you and you stop. You know, even though you don't stop physically, somewhere in your mind you stop.
Yeah.
And be like, wow. You know, it could be the smell, it could be the look, it could just be something about him that attracts you to him. So when it comes to marketing yourself as a freelancer, there are different sides to it. So I came from the angle of the lady to talk about inbound marketing.
Okay.
Inbound marketing is showing up in the spaces where your clientele, where your potential customers are, and showing up hot. So showing up attractive. Yeah, let's use attractive. That sounds, you know, that sounds under 18. So you need to show up attractive. That's where content comes in. All right. Say, for example, you are a graphic designer. One of the things you need to do is to showcase your work, you know, where your clients are likely going to be able to see your work. So, for example, go on LinkedIn, create a profile, and then once in a while, post your designs, post content around graphic design, post content that educates, you know, the people that you're trying to reach out to about what they should look for when they want to choose a graphic designer, or the processes that go into, you know, coming up with a very creative design, something like that. But just show up attractive, such that the people who need your service will keep seeing your content and they're like, wow, this person, you know, looks like he knows what he's doing, looks like an authority in this field. We should employ this guy. So some days ago, Chinelo, one of my connections on LinkedIn, posted that she recently hired a graphic designer for her company, and the graphic designer did not send an application. She literally begged the guy to please come and work for her company. Why? Because the guy shows up on LinkedIn almost every day, posting content that you cannot just ignore. This guy is good. So Chidolo said, wow, I need this guy in my company. So she had to reach out to the guy and literally beg him. So this is a client begging, you know, you to please come and take my money. So come and take my money. That's inbound marketing.
Yeah.
When you show up attractive on the social media, on the internet, you know, with your content, with the things that you do. And that's why your work has to be solid. All right. You need to keep building yourself so that you can show up in a way that you can attract the right client. So there is inbound marketing. Then there is outbound marketing. I'm just teaching traditional marketing that I learned in MassCom, but it's actually relevant in the scope of what we're looking at. Outbound marketing is now, you're not waiting for clients to come and meet you. You're going to meet the clients. All right? And there are several ways this can happen, whether it is, you know, offline or online. For example, on Upwork, Upwork allows you to do outbound marketing. So a client comes, post a gig on Upwork, you're expected to check the work and see if it's something you can do, then send out a proposal to the client. Mm. So that is outbound marketing. You're reaching out to the person and saying, this is me and this is why you should hire me. That also works on LinkedIn. People post jobs on LinkedIn, hybrid jobs, on-site jobs, remote gigs. You know, as a freelancer, most likely you're going to tilt towards remote gigs. Reach out to the company, submit an application, send in your resume, send in your, you know, cover letter, and show up to the person. Let them know that you like the job, you want the job, and this is why you think you are the best person for the job. So still using our relationship example. So a guy likes Ozioma. Again, Ozioma is the, you know, center of the attraction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A guy likes Ozioma. And what does he have to do? He needs to walk up to Ozioma and tell Ozioma that I like you. Yeah. And this is why I like you. And this is why you should, you know, say yes to me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that this is now the technicalities that go into, you know, sending out such proposals. For example, if you really like Ozioma and you want to approach Ozioma, you should have done some background work. True. You know, to know who Ozioma is, you know. Yeah. How do you show up in a way that Ozioma is going to be swept off her feet? Or else you're going to show up and Ozioma is just going to be like, who are you? I better come on, get out.
Yeah.
You know, there are guys that walk up to ladies and you don't just let them talk for 2 minutes and be like, see, stop wasting your time. But there are some other guys that walk up to ladies and you just give them audience, you know.
Yeah.
And then you exchange numbers and then you want to talk to them again and then you want to talk to them again and the rest is history, you know. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So those are the technicalities or the intricacies that come into, you know, outreaches. You need to, you know, do your homework, send a very solid cover letter, send a resume that's tailored to the job so that the clients can really know that you are ready for the job. That's two. The third one would be, you can also get clients through networking. All right. So the first client that I got was actually somebody within my network. So when I say networking, I mean, you could actually get somebody to work for within your network. You could also come from networking with other freelancers in your space.
Yeah.
So when my business grew to a certain point, I began to get so much jobs. Of course, I started out as a company. So I began to get so much jobs that I began to hire freelancers. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, some of the people that worked for me in those days were people already in my network, people that I knew the quality of their work already, because I could not, the quality that I would deliver to the clients, I could not hire somebody who would deliver less, nice, because it would bounce back on the company. So I went out for the people in my network already, whom I knew the quality of what they could give, you know. And so that's where networking comes in. These guys were just hanging around me. We just had a relationship, you know, and because they were in my network, you know, it just gave them, you know, the opportunity to be the first partakers of. So network with people in your space, I mean, in your niche, because sometimes these people might have too many jobs on their hand and they would recommend you, you know. I mean, they would say, okay, somebody reach out to them and say, I want you to help me do this job. And they're like, oh, my hands are tied, but I know somebody who is equally as good as I am that you can actually talk to, and then you get the job, you know. So I was explaining that with the fact that when I started my company and then we got to a point and we had so much jobs, I had to outsource some of the jobs to the freelance writers in my network. All right, people that I already knew, I knew the standard of the work they would deliver. They were the people that actually got the first vote to get the job. So networking is actually very important. And you know, the fourth one that I'm going to talk about, it's really not what many people talk about, but it worked for me. It worked for me sometimes this year. What happened last year was, I must have written at least 1,000 articles, I mean, as of now, but because most of them were ghost written, my name do not appear on the articles.
Yeah.
So last year, I began to think of being more intentional about writing articles that carried my name, you know, so that I could have my name all over the internet.
Yeah.
So I decided to volunteer for a company and, you know, be writing for them every week, free of charge. So somewhere along the line, based on the quality of work that I sent in, they had paid clients that needed people to write for them. Mm. And guess who they thought about? They thought about me.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to write a couple articles for them and I got paid for it. All right. So sometimes volunteering can actually open up opportunities to, you know, for you. It worked for me. I know it must have worked for several other people too,
yeah,
but it's something that you can actually think of. But let me rearrange the order.
Mm-hmm.
If you're starting up as a freelance, And as a freelancer, I'm going to advise you, number one, take inbound marketing very serious. Take branding very serious.
Yeah.
Look for a social media platform where your potential clients are and begin to show up there, you know, as what you actually, who you want people to actually know you, you know, what you want people to know you for. Show up there consistently and make sure you're, you know, you show up in style. Make sure you show up in an attractive manner. Then two, take outreach very serious. While you're doing, you know, while you're putting out content and you're waiting to attract clients, ensure that you're also, you also have a strategy in place where you're reaching out to clients. Put the two to use, because ultimately I got my first client from outreach, you know, so not from inbound marketing, from outbound marketing, reaching out to people and sending proposals and the likes. That was how I got my first, my second, my third clients, you know. So it was afterwards, let's say a few months into, you know, down the lane, or maybe 1 year or thereabout, that my inbound, you know, my content creation and everything began to work for me. All right, so, but I started out early enough. I mean, it takes some time for you to build authority, for you to, you know, put yourself out there enough that people see you over and over again for who you really are. So that began to work for me down the line. But before then, I'd gotten a couple clients from outbound marketing. And somewhere in between, then networking is working for me now. Somewhere in between, volunteering then worked for me. So, you know, so, but start with inbound marketing. Take your brand serious. Put out content. There's no better way to show that you're an expert and an authority than to actually create content and to show up in an attractive manner. Then side by side, find a platform like Upwork, like LinkedIn, and have a target to send out proposals every day. So I'm going to share this before I wrap it up, you know, on this. 2021, when I decided that I was not going to work for Nigerian clients again, you know, this part of, there's also an, there's a history to this, you know, but it's not for today. So after some clients, you know, made me see Shege in 2020. Shege. Shege is Nigerian word for word. Now do I translate Shege to English? After they showed me Shege, so I decided in 2021 that I was never going to work for a Nigerian or an African client. So I decided I wanted to break into the American market. And what did I do? Outreach. So everything I must have said on this program, there are things that I practice. So for outreach, I decided I was going to send at least 3 proposals out every day. So I programmed my day in such a way that I set alarm. Of course, because there's a time zone difference. So because I'm in Nigeria, I want to break into the American market. Some of the, you know, places in America, 5 hours difference, some 6, but at most say 8, you know, depending on the time zone. So, you know, but basically 5 hours is just fine. So I program my alarm for 2 p.m. I don't send out proposals until 2 p.m. downwards in Nigerian time, because by then it should be probably 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. or 8 a.m. or thereabouts in America. So that whoever is going to be in charge of the, you know, recruitment process will see my application just as it is coming in. If, for instance, you send the application 7 a.m. Nigerian time, most likely the person is still in bed, you know, sleeping. And so there's going to be a whole lot of proposals or applications piled up, and yours may just be lost somewhere in their inbox. So I did that consistently every day, sent out at least 3 proposals from the 2nd of January. And then I got my first client February 20. That's like 50 days afterwards.
Wow.
But I sent out at least 100 proposals before I got my first client. Then came the second, then came the third, and the rest, they say again, is history. So there's some level of hard work to it, and you must be ready to do the work if you're really going to succeed in this industry.
Yeah,
the competition is crazy. So if you're not ready,
it's steep. There are millions of freelancers all over the world.
Exactly. So if you don't put in the work, in Nigeria again, we say Oyo is your case.
If you, I wish you can translate that to exactly. You can translate that to English. Okay, you're on your own. Yeah,
you're on your own. Exactly. But thank you for that. Oh my God. Now, finances is always the point where we have to finally get to making the money and then and all of that. So what do I charge is usually what anyone will ask. So how do I charge? What do I charge? You know, I think you said you started with $15 for, I mean, your initial gigs. So how do I know what to charge for my first gig and all of that? These are possibly the questions that new freelancers will want to know. So as someone that has been in this space for a while, what will you say to someone asking this? Okay, so how do I begin to charge? What do I charge first and all of that?
Man, that's a tricky question to give a direct answer to. But I always like to say a lot of factors are going to be considered when you're just starting out as a freelancer. For example, take Upwork, for example. When you start as a freelancer at Upwork, just generally, let's even leave Upwork out of it. As a newbie, as a beginner, you can't charge what I am charging. For example, if the person is a freelance writer, I have 4 years experience under my belt in this game. I have, you know, some level of work on my portfolio. If you're just starting out, chances are that you don't have that much experience. You can't really prove, you know, you don't have a track record for what you can do. So you need to come down, you know, a little bit to be able to get your first client, your second client, and then build some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. So as you grow, you then begin to review your price and have benchmark. Oh, you know, it's after 2 years now. No, I can't take that. You know, so today, I remember a prospect sent me a mail, was it sometime last year? And, you know, and I posted it in my freelancing coaching group. And one of the students was like, really? You're even turning down a job? Yes. I've gotten to the level where there are certain offers that I cannot take because it doesn't seem to me like a good use of my time. So, but at the start, I could not do that. You know, when you're just starting out in this game and you have not made a dime in the business, you can literally take on any job, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I used to say, I think I was lucky. I was lucky that my first gig was a $15 gig. You know, several people had it worse. It could be $5.
Yeah.
If you've ever heard my friend's story before, Julius Omokuno, a very pathetic story. His first gig, you know, as a freelancer, was a client that reached out to him on Upwork and was going to pay for 50 800-word articles. 800-word articles. And the client said he was going to pay $1 per article.
My God.
$1 for 800-word article. But because he was just starting out, he felt like, well, let's do it. Let's just do it and put in all the energy. So he was going to write 800 words in 50 places. Wow. And he was going to collect $50. Bad as it was, my friend Julius Omokuno dedicated 3 to 4 days of sleepless nights and, you know, some hustle and toil. Wrote all the articles, send it to the client, and then the client says, not impressed. The work is not good.
My God.
I will not pay you.
My God.
The client did not accept the job. Sad part, some days later, Julius visited the website of the client only to find that all the articles were on the site.
My God.
All right. So some people have it worse than I had. You know, I mean, I got my first gig in this space, $15 per hour, 4 hours, and I got my $60. Some people get to do $2 per hour, $5 per hour. But I'm just saying, when you're starting out, you can't charge premium.
Yeah.
You're a beginner. So you need to charge some prices that makes you be able to compete with people like me. For example, a client comes on Upwork, I am charging $35 per hour, and you come and tell the client, I can do exactly the same thing for $10. The client's like, whoa. So if the client is convinced, or let's say sometimes they just say, okay, let me just give it a try. I mean, $10 is not too much to lose. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the chances are that you can get the job while the client can pass me over. Pass me over because it just looks like something that is, you know, a no-brainer. I mean, so you may need to charge less. Then as you grow, you're going to begin to review your price. So you need to do your research, know what is the standard price, you know, in the industry, then look at somewhere where you can actually pitch your own tent.
Mm-hmm.
You will not be shooting yourself too much in the leg, and at the same time, you will also not be asking for too much for a beginner because it will scare away. I mean, why, if I charge $35 and you're just starting out, and I charge $35 too, why will a client give you a job? It's not possible. They will give you a job based on my experience and what I can deliver.
True.
So, you know, one of the things you can use to attract them as a beginner is the lower price, you know. So as you then build your portfolio, you can say, oh, I've spent 6 months in this game. I have like 10, 20 jobs in my portfolio. I can never charge $5 again. Then you raise your price, raise it to 10. Then from 10, raise it to 15, then 15 to 20. You keep growing and keep growing.
Mm. keep growing and keep making the money. I don't want to let you go.
If you don't want to let me go, then you should actually begin to pay for this session. Actually, so, charge $40 per hour.
Oh my God.
I'll send you my invoice.
Oh wow, please. Oh my God. Okay, one more question. I'll finally let you go. Just one more.
All right.
So, what are some of the misconceptions about the gig economy? You are in this space. There are some things that you hear about the place where you operate, and you're like, what? Where did you hear that from? You know? So, what are some of those misconceptions? And what would you say to someone who is skeptical about pursuing the gig work as a viable career option?
All right. So, I remember writing about this on my LinkedIn recently too. Apparently, everything I've said on this podcast, I must have written about them at one point or the other.
Wow.
You know, so there are a lot of misconceptions. And just like I did in that article, I'm going to just mention two. The first one, a lot of people still think, people like us who come online and say, oh, I've made XYZ money on the internet.
Yeah.
They feel like we're scammers. All right. Mm-hmm. So some people still find it too good to be true. That people are really making money on the internet.
Yeah.
I know. And sometimes I go as far as, if you really doubt that I make money on the internet, come into my DM and I will show you screenshots. Uh-huh. And I will show you bank statements, you know. So that's the point. It's a misconception that, you know, that people are really not making money on the internet. The truth is of the matter is that people are making money on the internet.
True.
I am a living witness. I have friends that I know, you know. For example, Julius that I mentioned recently is a top-rated freelancer on Upwork. And even if you go check his profile on Upwork, of course, I expect you to know that Upwork will not be lying about that. Yeah. He has made at least $75,000 working on Upwork. Wow. All right. So the first misconception is that this is scam. No, it's not. People are making money from their homes, remote jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I quit my job in 2019, and up until 2023, 4 years later, I've never been in an office working a 9-to-5. All right. So people are making money. It's not a scam. You just need to be sure that you do not fall into the wrong hands. You know, people who are actually, you know, swindle you of your money. So that's the first misconception. The second one that looks like it, it's the opposite of it, is that people think freelance work or remote work, do nothing, get rich. I mean, you just, you know, so I get to train people all the time, and I see people come into the, you know, the session sometimes thinking that, oh, once I just do this session for 2 weeks, this training for 2 weeks like this, bam, I'll just begin to make dollars.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to continue.
Cash out.
There is no such thing as get rich, do nothing. It's actually scam. You know, anything that sounds like that, it's not just that it is too good to be true. It is absolutely not true. There is no such thing. So there's going to be some level of hard work that you need to put into it. I mean, okay, imagine I said when I wanted to break into the American industry, 2021, I have my alarm program for 2 p.m. Yeah. I dedicate 30 to 1 hour sending out proposals, at least 3 every day. Between then and February 20, when I got my first gig, that's 50 days. And let's remove the non-working days, you know, out of the equation. We're going to have like 14 days not working. So we have about 36 working days times 3 proposals. That's going to be about 108 proposals before I got my first gig. That's some dedication. That's some hard work.
Yeah.
And then there's the point where you need to refine your cover letter, refine your resume. You know, you're sending a proposal, you know, a proposal for this job. You can't send exactly the same proposal for the next job. Yes. You need to tweak some things, edit some things. That's hard work. That's some commitment.
Yeah.
And so it's this level of hard work that ultimately brought the first result, and then the second, and then the third. And, you know, so people just think this is something that you just start today, or, you know, you necessarily don't have to do anything and then you're just cashing out. It doesn't work like that. I mean, if anybody says to you that that's how they made money in the industry, they're like one person out of 1 million. It doesn't work like that. There's some work to it.
Some work to it. Exactly. Let's say it now for those at the back.
Yeah, so that the people at the back can hear.
Oh my God. This has been amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing.
It's my pleasure.
All right, guys. So this is what we call it a day for today. So I will come your way again next week with an amazing, amazing conversation again, discussing something that will benefit you as always. My name is Ozioma Anyoji, and this is where we wrap it up on Rooted and Robust Podcast. Have a beautiful week, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Inaendeshwa na AfriPods.